I suppose that you folks have gotten terribly upset about the fact that you probably now will never be taught really how to audit. There really isn't any hope for it. Probably somebody knows someplace or another. But the success with a prequel is the easiest thing to obtain in the world if certain factors are absent from the case. The first factor that is the most upsetting to an auditor with any kind of training at all is the fact that the pre-clear has his own surroundings and environment. Now that's an unfortunate fact. And that is a very upsetting thing to an auditor, to have a pre-clear who is having a bad time getting into two-way communication go back into a restimulative environment after every session where everybody is bound and determined to drive him out of two-way communication. Let's just take this two-way communication as a process and recognize its frailty. The reason why a pre-clear has a higher point of no return than we would like to have him have is simply that the earliest, best process that you can do with him is two-way communication. And there are many, many pre-clears who cannot even vaguely do anything lot of two-way communication. A lot of pre-clears that you've processed and you've wondered, what on earth? Why don't these fancy processes work? Well, the reason why the fancy process doesn't work horribly enough is because a two-way communication was not engaged upon before processing began. Now, therefore, two-way communication is a terribly important process and is there at number one on intensive procedure. It isn't a root step. It's simply one two-way communication. Now, the establishment of this two-way communication is a tremendously important factor. And unless it is adequately done, we would have ourselves a very, very difficult time with any other process. Now, there's many a pre-clear sitting there in the auditing chair. You say to him, well, how are you today? And he says, fine. And you say, what we've been doing, you've been doing any good? Oh, yes, yes. Who isn't even vaguely in two-way communication with you. You're operating on a social response. He's being nice because he's well-trained. You're not talking to the pre-clear. You wouldn't know this until you came off of training response mechanisms. And you say, how are you? How are we doing? Is everything going all right? Any one of these social questions, any one of these social questions will get a machine response. So therefore, we have to be very, very, very careful that in two-way communication, we talk on a gradient scale of difficult things to talk about. Gradient scale. So it's all right for you to say, how are you? And how are we doing, and so forth, and get your answer back patly if you recognize that you're talking to a machine to begin with. Anyone is at least partially assisted in his communication by communication machinery. You puts in the nickel and gets out the plugged cent. And they're just like playing a jukebox. You can walk down the street here, you can walk to filling stations, in restaurants and so on, and none of these people that you are actually trading with and so on are really in a two-way communication with you unless they are very, very high-toned people. If you were to say to some girl, if you were to say to some waitress in a cafe, well, what do we have today? What do you recommend? What looks good on the menu? What is this? You will simply get yap, 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 yap. You see, right, fast response. And now you say to her, not on a change of pace or anything of the sort, you simply say to her, What color street dress do you wear? Of course, you're going to get a comm lag immediately merely because you've changed pace. That's one reason to get a comm lag. But more importantly, you're suddenly off the waitress machine. What color street dress do you wear? What brand lipstick do you use? When does your vacation come up? Now, she'd think you were making a pass at it, of course. Or something like this. But that, by the way, would probably start up another machine if you were to say, are you married? When do you get off work? That would just be another machine response. But if you were to ask her, what is your mother's maiden name? You would now be inviting a conversation with the person. Up to this time, they can fend off with all this automaticity, machinery, trained responses, and so forth. What is your mother's maiden name? Now, as I say, the startlement connected with this will give you some comm lag, but the truth of the matter is you would not really know, unless you were very well trained and very observant, if you were well trained and observant yourself in the field of Dianetics and Scientology, would know when she walked across the floor exactly where she was in the tone scale. But the sure test of it would be something on the order, get her off track already and say, how long have you been working here? That's a little bit off the machine. And how many waitresses do work here? And so on. And then say, what part of the country do you come from? And what part of the country does your mother come from? And what is your mother's maiden name? Now, all of a sudden, you've let her out there, and you're clear out of the establishment. You're off the machinery, and there's no machine response for this. Now, of course, she has to think about this, so that throws in a little bit of a lag. But why should she have to think about this? You know, it's an uncommon datum, you say, and therefore, well, actually, it is not a very uncommon datum. She would know this, but comm lag. Now, as you start to ask her further and further questions, which are not immediately concerned with her profession, you would sound out exactly what the standard communication lag of this case was. Now, a person coming to you as an auditor or coming into an auditing session, of course, expects to be asked questions of various kinds which are off the machine questions, and so there's no startlement in there at all. So you can just eliminate that factor. You ask this person, what is your mother's maiden name? You'd have to ask such a question as this: how many chairs are there in this room? What is the address of this building? And so on, to get off the machinery. So an auditor could make a mistake. He could take the communication lag of the pre-clear's automatic social machinery and think that he was in communication with the pre-clear. He could make this mistake, but after you've done it a time or two, it's one of these mistakes of, do you know how to ride a bicycle or don't you? You know how to ride a bicycle, all right? If you don't, you'll fall over on your face. Or you'll learn how to ride a bicycle now. The thing I'm trying to talk about here is a two-way communication. Just this question, what is your mother's maiden name? How many chairs, or another question, how many chairs are there in this room? Anything like that is an effort to get into a two-way communication. Now, very often, an auditor thinks in order to get into a two-way communication that he'd better get into the life history of this individual or discuss golf or something of the sort. There's nothing really wrong with doing this, but the auditor's actually wasting time to a marked degree. He can improve a pre-clear's two-way communication system. One of the best ways to improve it, by the way, is simply to ask a few questions and to get direct answers to the questions, just by asking the question again. What is your mother's maiden name? What do you want to know that for? Well, what is your mother's maiden name? What do you suppose it is? Let's guess. Well, why do you want to know my mother's maiden name? Well, I'm just asking you. And what is your mother's maiden name? Well, as a matter of fact, let's see, my father's name was, you know, this is all comm laggy stuff. If you could just get an answer to one question, you're auditing. See, one non-machine question, you're audited. Follow that? All right, so you get this briefly after 2 hours of session into two-way communication. You're all set now. Freakler feels a lot better for some reason or other. My little boy got up this morning, he's feeling all groggy. He waved his hand at me, sort of energetically, just for a moment, you know, and then kind of lapsed into apathy again. And so I waved my hand, the same hand at him, you see. And so he experimentally waved his hand once more, and I waved my hand once more. And then he waved his hand very, very energetically, and I waved mine very energetically. So he looked at me real hard, and he shook his head this way. So I shook my head that way. All of a sudden, he was laughing, talking. Next thing you know, he was scooting across the floor. He looked like a small express train. He was really in communication. Total auditing session, something on the order of a minute. That was actually an auditing session. He felt rather groggy. He probably felt out of sorts. Who knows? He might have had a stomachache. Something of this. Actually, the two-way communication in which we engaged there, that's just basic two-way communication. The most basic two-way communication is mimicry. And duplication, both ends of cause-distance effect. And who knows? I might have gotten him straight out of a stomachache. Or he might have been cutting teeth, you know, and had a toothache or something like that. And it didn't take any more time than that to get him out of that. Why did he get out of that? Two-way communication was engaged upon, that's all. All right, so after you've done this for 2 hours with a pre-clear, why, this pre-clear goes home. Pre-clear has a nurse taking care of him. This nurse's job will be at end and over the moment the pre-clear is well. So, guy gets home, nurse says, well, I don't suppose you feel any better now, do you? He says, I feel quite a bit better. I thought so. You feel no better at all, do you? Well, I do feel a lot better. I feel quite a little bit better. Well, I knew it. I told you the fellow was a quack all the time. Because you're dealing with somebody that's really out of two-way communication. The person taking care of this guy, who would stamp a guy into the ground just to go on getting a few bucks, or a family for no real reason whatsoever just to keep Uncle Roger down, they're really out of two-way communication. Now, if you were to walk up to this fellow's nurse, see, after you've audited, this fellow has nursing, we walk up to this nurse, and we say to this nurse, how many hospitals have you worked in? And the person says, do we have to go on standing here? And you say, well, how long have you worked for Mr. Jones? Well, they called me in here at the beginning of this particular case. You know, before that, I was working at the Good Shepherd Hospital. It's after that I began to do out nursing and so forth. And I have had many patients like him. This nurse may be moving your preclear and placing your preclear in spots in space. This person may be moving your preclear around if you're processing an invalid or a child. How do you really basically evaluate for anyone? You move him in space. That's the most basic evaluation that can be done, is move somebody in space. Now you'd say, man alive, you mean to tell me that a taxi driver evaluates for everybody? You said he does. And a couple of the big labor organizations, I won't say communist organizations, because that's a dirty word, employed several cab drivers in Washington, D.C. to make a certain statement to every passenger they picked up. Why? So it would become a fact in order to fight and defeat a bill in Congress? That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, these cab drivers were paid to say, isn't that a terrible thing that's happening up there on Capitol Hill today? Passenger says, what? Oh, that labor bill. Awful. Yeah, well, you know, the fellow that really put that in was a crook, basically, originally. And the next thing you know, they had carried enough wives and relatives and secretaries and other things around town, just making this statement repetitively, and these people went off and made it to other people, that they actually managed to defeat a bill in Congress. Because cab driver moves person in space. See, he knows where he's going, and the passenger simply sits back there, you know, and gets himself driven to that place. I don't do that with cabs myself, for the excellent reason I find the cab driver usually likes to add in 5 or 6 extra blocks. So I tell him the route to follow. We get out of two-way communication immediately. Particularly a Philadelphia cab driver. New York cab drivers aren't so bad. They're so straight line, I think, that the Empire State Building are getting their road, they would at least try to go straight through. But Philadelphia, different picture. All right. So you process this pretty clear for 2 hours. You get him in communication. And remember, it is such a basic process that everybody is more or less fooling around with two-way communication, you see. Preclear goes home and yap, 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 all with a bad two-way communication model. Regardless of what this preclear says, the model is bad. Now, this nurse we were just talking about, let us say it was a practical nurse, never really been trained or anything of the sort. Just got to keep on the job there, one way or the other, has economic problems of his own or her own, and we discover then that our preclear has a bad communication model, which is going to move him in space. Follow me? Going to move this person around in space. At the same time, maybe talk to him about how he can't get any better, or how auditing isn't going to do him any good, or anything of the sort. Now, there is about the not just a nurse, you understand, it's the wife or the husband. I've had it happen several ways, but one day, one fine day, I got a preclear. I ran. This preclear was very doubtful, it was a long time ago, about being able to remember anything. And we ran conception on him. And boy, he ran that with the fullest reality he'd ever had on the universe. Much fuller reality on conception than he had on present time. And the reason for this is because he was stuck in it and always had been. And we ran this out. This preclear was feeling fine, feeling swell, had a crooked back, and his back was starting to unkink right there after the auditing session. And I didn't make him go into the other room and lie down and read a book. Like a darn fool, I let him go home. And he got home and he says, well, something really happened this time. I feel a lot better. And his wife said to him, I've heard that before. Started in on him on a two-way communication basis and caved this guy right in. Next time he came back for a session, boy, was he immersed. He was really way down there. Well, we'd had a successful session and so on. The reason I'm speaking to you about this must be important, or I would not have looked for much more rapid processes. It's necessary to get a process rapid enough so that you jump the preclear above the amount of loss every time you audit him. You've got a problem in the environment, of an environment that is pretty bad off, if your preclear is bad off. If you don't believe this, you take somebody who's having a rough time and then go and look at the rest of the family and you wonder why you're auditing this preclear. Why aren't you auditing the rest of the family? Well, actually, the preclear is well enough off so that he knows he needs some help. And they're bad enough off so that they don't even know they need any help. See? Here you've always got this problem with you to some degree when you're processing any prickler. You'll see this happen time after time. That's, we've got the problem, the frog crawling up 3 inches during the auditing session and then falling back a certain distance by reason of his immediate surroundings and environment after the auditing session. All right. If your process is very slow, then you don't get him up 3 inches. Let's say his fallback is going to be a constant 3 inches. Time between sessions, he's going to fall down the well 3 inches, regardless of where you put him, you see. Therefore, if you had an auditing session which only lifted him 1 inch, he would be 2 inches worse off the next time you saw him. See, this is highly arbitrary. All right, let's say you had a process which was 2 inches, and he fell back 3 inches between auditing sessions. He'd only be 1 inch worse off, wouldn't he? Well, why don't we have a process that gets him up 5 inches, and then we would have gained 2 inches between sessions, always expecting the pre-clear to lose somewhat between sessions. Now, an auditor really ought to know better than this, who was an old veteran at this business, came around to see me the other day, and the difference, the amount of fallback which the pre-clear had done, was so astonishing that this fellow was tremendously baffled, and he didn't see it as just a little bit worse than what happened to every pre-clear that he processes. This individual had started out at the beginning of several sessions as a black five. You know, they're just black fives and they're black fives. And this fellow started as a black five, and after a few hours of processing, it all of a sudden turned on sonic visio, full tactile, could spot spots in space, was doing excellently on prediction, had full color, full depth visio, and so on, things that he had never imagined, was exteriorizing and so on, and all of a sudden, somewhere between sessions, something happened to him, and he had become a black five. He just gone boom. He passed through another occlusion belt. And this auditor was astonished. Well, he shouldn't have been astonished. He should have realized that he was simply looking at a bigger drop than he ordinarily saw between sessions. Of course, he processed the fellow a bit more and got him out of it. But here's our argument here is in favor of gaining ground as rapidly as possible. If we don't gain ground, our contest is in for a much longer tour. A longer lot of auditing and so forth is necessary. Now, we don't want pre-clears today for a long time. We want to process them sharply enough and swiftly enough so that the fallback between sessions is not very harmful to the case. Now, what you're actually in contest with is not so much the pre-clear's bank as the pre-clear's environment. You're trying to get this pre-clear so that he can handle his environment. Under actual test, it has been discovered that it is more important to get an individual up in the aspect of pan-determinism, things he's willing to control. It's much more important to do that than it is to do any other single factor. You know, we used to have self-determinism and used to evaluate it on the basis of 8 dynamics. Well, this is very sloppy. Pan-determinism has, as its technical definition, the willingness, that's all it is, willingness to control, determine the course of, two or more identities, whether or not opposed. Now, that is the technical definition of pan-determinism. It's the willingness to handle two or more identities, whether or not opposed. In other words, we have a cop and a robber standing there arguing. The willingness of the individual to handle the cop and the robber at the same time and still have them argue. Or two people walking down the street in perfect agreement and so forth, the willingness to handle those two people, you know, whether or not opposed. But it would be two or more. Now, we have in auditing a third dynamic situation. There's always more than two present. Actually, an auditor, to get good results on a pre-clear, has to be willing to handle himself, his own bank, his own future, the preclear, the preclear's self, the preclear's own bank, the preclear's future, in order to really obtain real good results. Otherwise, the preclear will be restimulated and so forth. This is pan-determinism. Yes, this knocks into a cocked hat all old-time conceptions of how you ought to assume one side and then stay on that one side forevermore and protect and defend just one side. And because people evaluate it like this, they would look at you with askance if you were two countries at war and you were a citizen of country A. If you suddenly started being perfectly willing to determine both the course of country A and country B, and conceive the idea that both countries ought to do this and do that. See, people would look at you very strange about this. Actually, country A is trying by force of arms to alter the determinism of country B. It's not willing to alter the determinism of country B at all, or it would not be fighting it. Somewhere it dropped all responsibility for country B. Now you as a citizen of country A come along and you're perfectly willing to handle both of these countries. Everybody says, well, you've broken your loyalty to country A. Of what does that loyalty consist? The willingness to be only on the side of country A, but to be on it, or to be on its side and somebody else's too. See? It's a vast difference. A lot of people take it that you have deserted. You have deserted country A if you're willing to determine something else too. That's not true. All right, pan-determinant. We just take a light look at it there. When you go into communication with a preclear, you are actually self-determining, you see. You're staying on this side of the terminal. You know, you're staying on this terminal. And you're not going over here in this other terminal. Well, actually, to produce good results, you have to be willing to be both terminals on the communication line. That's a peculiar thing. That's one thing a Thetan can do. All right. As horrible as it may seem to some people, an auditor has to be willing to control both the parties there. Well, to an auditor who is only engrossed in controlling his own body or his own bank, this becomes an impossible situation. And that auditor will become restimulated while auditing. If this auditor can handle both the aberrated bank and his own bank simultaneously, why, of course, your preclear come right on up the tone scale. But the funny part of it is you've got to restore to the preclear some of this pan-determinism in order to get him along. So although you could, actually, as you get upscale, you realize how this is very possible, walk the preclear's body around the room in 8C. You know? I mean, walk his body around the room and have it touch walls. Now the preclear's standing back there in the corner someplace saying, I wonder where I am. although you could do this, you don't. You invite him to do so. Well, this doesn't mean that you lose your pan-determinism simply because you let somebody else be self-determined or pan-determined. There are as many viewpoints possible in this universe as there are life units in this universe. And that's an awful lot of viewpoints. And what do you know? Each one of them sees a different universe. Well, perfectly all right for you to go ahead. I mean, it's remarkable that there's any similarity in their universes. All right, you have to be willing to some degree to be pan-determined in this session rather than merely self-controlled or something of the sort. Have to be willing to control both sides of this. Well, good gosh, do you recognize something here? That your control of the preclear goes to some degree into a control of his environment. And if his environment solely by two-way communication is going to knock him to ribbons every time he walks out of the auditing session, then you need good tools, don't you? In other words, there's one thing to go into the house and say, now look, I'm auditing this fellow now and I'm going to pop anybody in the jaw that upsets him between now and the next session. It won't work. They'll for sure cut him to ribbons in your absence. Best way to control his environment is to jump him upscale rapidly enough so that he's a little bit proof against this. He can handle this a little bit better. Follow me? All right. Then let's look at two-way communication and recognize that it starts in at mimicry, and that a mimicry technique, nonverbal processing, might, in the case of a stimulative environment, might be superior. Now, what he's going to get when he gets out of that auditing session as invalidation is actually verbal. Now, if you had a process then that was superior to verbal processing, why you'd be in, wouldn't you? Well, that process happens to be two-way communication by mimicry. And when your preclear is one who is just vaguely going to be gotten into two-way communication in the session anyhow, you know, that's about all you're going to do for him. Be sure that on a verbal level, he's going to be knocked out of communication when he goes back into his environment again. So if this is the case, then you had certainly better do a type of processing on him that will rise above verbal communication. Remember, all verbal communication, if done obsessively, is on the symbol part of the know down the mystery scale. That's verbal communication where it's located on the scale. Therefore, mimicry is highly indicated. Now, there is a process which is one that's in the R270s, which merely consists of passing any kind of an object between yourself and the preclear. You're not talking to him at all. You just pass this object back and forth. A very interesting process. But the way to really know this is not as complicated as that process. Now let's try this out. Let's try this out now as two-way communication. Whatever the preclear does, you do. Now that's what we're going to try out, okay? And you will see the most basic form of communication come to life. Okay.
I have a question on that. Yes. If he speaks or asks a question, would you duplicate the statement of the question or answer it? And would you duplicate what he says if he simply speaks?
Oh, you continue to talk with him in a normal way because you would delete the A and the R out of the triangle. See?
Physical duplication. While you're carrying on verbal two-way communication.
Right. Verbal two-way communication with plenty of A and R in it. And if you're going to talk at all, and your complete duplication with the motions of the body. Okay. Mm.